everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up California. So for the last couple of weeks, I have been riding solo, and being the greedy bastard I am, I did not mind. I like getting in-depth, getting anal, but you know what's better than just going solo is when you have a good co-host who you can bounce ideas off, you can disagree, they push back, I push back. It makes for a much better episode. And this week, returning to Fired Up California, is my co-host, Mr. Tyler Collins, fresh out of the land of sushi. Tyler, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Getting over the jet lag from the land of the rising sun, Japan. So
how was the vacation?
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah, my wife and I and some other people, we were there for 10 days and a lot of sushi, like you said, a lot of ramen. It was a great time.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah, the ramen. They love the sushi and ramen. I have been to Tokyo. I wish I had known you were going. I would have given you probably a couple $100 and figured out a figurine to buy because you get them so much cheaper there. As you can see behind me, I don't collect them, but every so often I buy the nostalgic ones, you know. I grew up with that. Behind me you see the Wolverine Deadpool. That was from the movie, a twofer. But I grew up with Wolverine. It was just pretty cool. I got it from Freddie Prinze all the way to ultra shows people don't know of. And in Tokyo, there's like one building. I don't know where it's at. I can't remember. It was years ago. Where like literally every floor is one of these companies, and thousands of these figurines. I mean, they're pricey. Figurines are pricey, but you don't have to deal with all the shipping costs, the tariffs, all that type of stuff. So I wish I had known. But I'm glad you had a good time. Were you a sushi fan before you left?
I was, yeah. My wife less so. Hello, so that was a bit of an adjustment for her. Yeah.
I used to not like sushi until I went there. And then my first experience over there was a conveyor belt going all the way around. Just all kinds of different sushis. It was incredible. Anyway, we've got a great show. We are going to talk about, we have California, we have San Diego topics. We have LA topics. We have general topics. And it all affects us. You know, Tyler, I didn't have it this episode, but as I'm sure you're aware, Gavin Newsom's been in the news. I'm not sure if there's any Gavin Newsom topics, but I've kind of beaten that like a dead horse. But he was on Bill Maher the other night, you know, and talking. Yes, he's out here for the high-speed rail and a couple of other things. But I tell you, that guy is gunning to be the next president. However, I think he is he's like a battered woman and just doesn't realize it. You know, he is going to be taken down pretty easily. His track record is just inescapable. And when it comes to debates, once you get on that campaign trail, lying is going to be tough to do without pushback. And Bill Maher gave him some pushback, and he deflects it. And the problem with just today's journalists, and Bill Maher, whether he wants to admit it or not, kind of plays a role of one, is they don't push back to the lie. They give him that tough question, and then they accept the lie. Were you able to see that?
I think that's one of the things that conservatives like about Bill Maher. I mean, Bill Maher is not a conservative, but conservatives like him because Bill Maher, more often than not, says what he feels. And if Bill thinks that something's BS, he's going to call you out for it. And Newsom's no exception here.
But that's just it. He asked a tough question but didn't follow up. And that's what you said is true on the surface. But when you actually look at some of those talks, there's no pushback. I mean, he'll have a witty pushback that's more of a joke than anything else, but it's not serious. So, and I've never felt I don't like Bill Maher because he's like Fetterman or Joe Manchin. They say or Rocco, what's his name? Rocona, he's here from the congressman from California.
Rocohana, I think.
Rocohana. They all talk a good game. We need to do this. We need to do that. And then when it comes to the actual vote, cha-ching, Democrat. They do as their masters tell them.
Yeah.
And with that, let's get down to it. We've got California San Diego gas prices, Tyler. They have spiked in their largest daily jump since 2023. And I saw another article say they're coming down. But then when I started researching it, the average price of self-serve regular – is there full service anymore? I don't think so. But the average price of self-serve regular gasoline in San Diego County rose by 8.7 cents to over $5.
We're saving money on eggs, and now we're spending it all on gas, I guess. There's just no winning here.
Exactly. And that marked the largest single day increase since July 11, 2023.
So I was going to buy chickens. Now I need to buy an oil rig. I guess that's the solution.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So the price was 11.6 cents higher than 1 week prior, 27 cents higher than 1 month prior, and 13.7 cents higher than 1 year prior. The whole point of all those priors is our gas prices are increasing. You know, the price had increased on 11 of the previous 12 days, and they do this short term because they're tracking gas. But in essence, gas is increasing. Your thoughts in conjunction to just California and the national level, where we're just so much higher.
Yeah, it's just making the cost of living for everyday people just that much harder, especially if you're commuting. A lot of the police officers in Carlsbad, for example, they commute from Temecula every day because it's cheaper to afford a house out there. And so all that driving, every gallon of gas that's more expensive, that eats into their paycheck.
Do you buy Doug Shute from the Automobile Club of SoCal? He says, well, this is because of spring break and more drivers on the road, or this is also from the oil prices reaching their highest levels since October 2024. I'll buy that one a little bit. But spring break, really?
Yeah, spring breakers have got to be driving a lot, I guess. Just really, really driving.
And they're like clown cars. They'll pile about 12 of them in a car. You know, they're not driving. Oh, take my car. No, they're like, who's the unlucky sap who's going to drive? Because they can't drink. Everybody else is guzzling away, you know? And he conveniently omits the fact that we have seasonal gas formulas. So as the season changes, you got to change the gas. So that alone in and of itself increases the price. So to me, this is a product of California, especially when the average gas around the nation is like $3.50 or something like that, and we're at $5. You know, do you think, and I'm always going to go back to this, don't you think the GOP, California Republican Party, should be using this as a campaign tactic?
Yeah, I think so. This is definitely going to add some gas to the tank, get them some more mileage in their campaigns. So
exactly. So, my friends, Californians, if you're wondering why your gas tank is moving up, blame your state legislature, Gavin Newsom, and everybody else who are continually making laws that taxes more. And in fact, the gas tax just jacked back up sometime last year. So, Tyler, before we move on, I didn't even think about it, but we did have a big move here in California. Are you aware of what transpired with the party?
So what transpired with the party?
I thought you were going to answer. We have a new chair.
The state party. We're talking about the state GOP. Yes.
Jessica Milan Patterson, our favorite token Latina. Hey, before y'all play the race card, yo soy Latino. Hablo español, escribo español, y soy de Panamá. I'm like, don't be throwing that race card. I'm Latino too. But she was a token Latina serving the white man, the evil white man, Tyler. Kevin McCarthy. Yeah. My point is you can obviously tell people I don't like her. It's because her predecessor, Jim Brulte, who's a obese white guy, and her, a petite Latina, didn't matter where their culture was, didn't matter what their skin color was, they just sucked at their job, and we kept exponentially losing ground. She's out. Corin Rankin is the new chair. I've only heard, I say 90% of what I've heard from her is good. 10% seems to be coming from people who just are too fundamentalist in terms of their conservatism. But she is a Trump supporter from day one, 2015, all the way through the bad times. So I think that gives us hope. Your quick thoughts on her before we move on to the next topic. So I haven't talked to you about it.
Well, you said she's a Trump supporter from 2015 on, so hopefully it's not we don't have a rhino situation here, so that's good.
Well, that's what we are going to have to wait and see. I always tell people, look, you got to be realistic. You don't reach the level of chair in California or any state without compromising with the establishment if you're a conservative. The question will become, how much has she compromised? And I'm not saying this as a vile, evil thing. I get sick and tired of people, I'm not going to compromise my values. Really? then you're not going to get anywhere in trying to convince somebody to vote for your candidate. You have to have compromise. So her actions will dictate. What irked me was Jessica trying to claim credit for 1 million registrations for the California Republican Party when she had nothing to do with that. You know, but anyway, we'll talk about that probably off camera more in depth. Let's keep moving and revisiting an old story here, Tyler. The suspect in the Cal Fire captain's murder is going to be extradited or has been extradited from Mexico. Remember that story? The LGBT, it made big news because, you know, LGBT fire women were in the news because of the L.A. wildfires, and they weren't given they did not show themselves well in their ability to fight fires. In fact, remember the one woman said, if a man needs my help, then he got himself in the wrong place in terms of
that was so that. Bad. Oh my gosh.
So then we get another LGBTQ fire chief, and she's in Temecula and she was murdered. And No, we're not applauding that. Nobody should be murdered for their beliefs. And her wife murdered her. Well, this woman, Yolanda Marodi, AKA Yolanda Olejniczak, that sounds Polish, was arrested in Mexico as she, after fleeing in February in the stabbing death of her wife, Cal Fire Captain Rebecca Marodi in San Diego County. Thoughts on that, Tyler?
Yeah, that's a tragic thing. Wild that happened right here in San Diego County. Glad that Yolanda has been arrested. I hear the name Yolanda, and I always think of Pulp Fiction. Yolanda! You remember that scene?
This chick I had a crush on in high school, her name was Yolanda.
Yeah, so glad they got Yolanda. But it seems like, their capture actually involved a couple of agencies here. So we had the county sheriffs as well as the Customs Service and Mexican authorities. They all coordinated to arrest Yolanda right across the border in the Rosarito. And that just happened actually March 22nd. So this is really recent.
Right. And for people not aware, Rebecca Marodi, a Cal Fire captain, was found dead in a home in Pala Temecula Road near State Route 76. And it's literally up the road from where I live in Valley Center. So it was close to home there. Here's a kicker to remind the audience. Yolanda, she's not an older woman. She's 71, so she's probably early, mid-50s. She had a prior manslaughter conviction from February 2004, served over 9 years of a 13-year, 8-month sentence. Now, you get probation if they feel you've learned. You're a better human being, yada, yada, yada. I don't think she learned her lesson here, Tyler.
I don't think she learned her lesson. I think we talked about this last time, too, that it's why would you marry someone who had murdered their previous spouse? That's just a bad idea. Yeah, I mean, it's horrible this happened, but I don't know. It's not great thinking there.
Yeah, and I don't care who you are. If you're straight, gay, whatever thing comes down, black, white, man, woman, that's a red flag when your would-be spouse murdered the previous spouse. I mean, I'd be honest. That's a deal breaker to me. You know, you're taking your – yeah. And I haven't seen the video, and I hope to never see it. But I guess it's pretty sad. She's running out saying, please, I don't want to die. And Yolanda said we should have thought about that before she was breaking up with her or separating from her. And before that happened. And I think Yolanda's probably going to get a life sentence of probably 100 some odd years this go round, and well deserved. All right. Let's head on back to Los Angeles, LA, the city of the angels run by the devil. Palisades Fire Recovery starts the greater LA area. Only 4 permits have been issued since that fire. ABC7 Los Angeles reporting on the local recovery issues. The Palisades fire occurred over 2 months ago. Obviously, we all know devastated the Pacific Palisades. You know, that's the LA area there. And as of Monday of last week, day 75 post-fire, only 4 permits had been issued by the Department of Building and Safety for homeowners to rebuild. So this means, Tyler, people are living in their cars, living in their RVs, living in hotels when they can afford them. The blessed ones have friends or family they're living on. Your thoughts?
This kind of goes back to Bill Maher's question to Gavin Newsom. Why can't I fix my roof? Why can't I fix my roof? And it's just dysfunction at the state, county, local levels in terms of building and maintaining the actual residences that people live in. And so it's in the event of a disaster like the Palisades fire where we see this dysfunction in place. 4 permits issued. The fire occurred 2 months ago. It goes back to when Trump visited Karen Bass and he said, we need to get this started right now. And they kept delaying and pushing the timeline. And that's what we're seeing here.
I agree. You know, I'm a political beast in terms of I love politics. I'm a junkie. I did serve on the little board over here. And politics is always a time of opportunity. What irked me here was Councilwoman Tracy Park, representing Palisades, found the low permit number, quote, concerning, unquote. Me, I'm looking at that board, and I'm going to say we need to convene an emergency meeting 3 days from now, or however the rules allow for it, and demand these people, the representatives for the county, be at that meeting. And everyone says, well, I don't want to do that. Then, well, you ain't going to get reelected because I'm going to make sure they know you don't care about them because that's how serious this is. You got to call them out, put them on the carpet, you know, and concerning. I mean, when somebody says to you in a situation like this, Tyler, man, you can't build your house. That's concerning, Tyler. That's concerning. What's that? I'll talk to you later, Tyler. Got to go. But that is concerning. You know, I mean, when you hear something like that, what's your thought?
It's a little insulting. It's kind of downplaying the level of concern that these residents have for a roof over their head. It's a bit more than just concern, I think.
Well, it gets worse. Let us not forget Mayor Karen Bass hired Hagerty Consulting for 10 million big ones.
Good old Hagerty Consulting out of Chicago.
To oversee the recovery. They're supposed to be streamlining the efforts, but when questioned by Council Member Monica Rodriguez, they argue that the city departments have prior recovery experience. That doesn't really matter. But they've been questioned. Your thoughts on the fact somebody's getting paid $10 million and we got 4 permits?
Yeah, where are the results here? We got 4 permits so far. What are they streamlining? Can you tell me about that?
Exactly. Here's my advice. Stop voting Democrat, you fools. Final comment.
I'm going to agree with that. Vote for common sense. Vote for people getting back in their houses and vote out the city council.
Exactly. All right, let's keep moving here and let's stick to the continues talking some L.A. fire here. So Karen Bass begs for Sacramento to bail L.A. out, and California itself may need help because of the 2028 Olympics. So the California Globe on the previous story here was I said ABC, but I want to give credit where credit's due. The Cal Fire captain, that was Times of San Diego. So I want to give a little bit of credit there. So, as we all know here in California, we are facing a $73 billion budget deficit in 2025. If you did not know that, now you do. And that's following deficits, Tyler, of $47 billion in 2024 and $30 billion in 2023. Notice the pattern here? It's getting higher and higher and higher. But we, you know what? We would only be facing a 73 billion. I'm thinking, well, there's 50 million wasted. How many more millions, hundreds of millions are being wasted in terms of the Trump defense fund? But anyway, I'm digressing here. So LA has a $400 million deficit entering its fiscal year, potentially rising to $1 billion over 3 years without cuts. Now, the state and LA are hosting the 2028 Summer Olympics. It's third time, 1932 and 1984. The 84 Olympics cost $546 million. That's $1.7 billion in today's dollars. And they never make a profit. They never make a profit. She's begging Sacramento to bail them out of $2 billion. So what she's saying is, California, we need you to pay our debt so we can continue our funding illegals, so we can continue giving money to Democrat NGOs, et cetera, et cetera. Your thoughts on $2 billion, her begging for it, and your general thought, can we afford the Olympics?
I don't know if we can afford the Olympics. We can't afford the basics. It's like, if you can't afford the water and power, why are you throwing an extravagant party? Maybe we should pay for the basics first.
I agree. And here's the kicker with the Olympics. People are going to come back to you, Tyler, and they're going to say, Tyler, damn it. Damn you, Tyler. Those $7 billion, that's going to be privately funded. And my take is, well, you know, can't they privately fund or kind of donate some of that money if they're in Los Angelinos, the California, to help that? Isn't that what community that you Democrats talk about all the time? Instead, you want Joe Blow on the street to give more taxes to do that? Well, William, it's privately funded. What's your problem? That's American capitalism. Yes and no. It cost $400 million in security in 1984. That's $1.2 billion today that the city's going to have to foot for security.
That's just the inflation-adjusted number. Back in the 80s, security wasn't nearly what it is today. Everything is much more secured because of the risk of mass crowd events. So you could see that number double, triple easily.
What do you think of her begging for $2 billion, though, just to kind of get the city back out of the red into the black just for their regular issues?
Well, she kind of has to, right? What else is she going to do besides groveling to her masters?
You know what? Actually, you're right. Because what they are going to do is not cut jobs that aren't needed, not cut taxes, which creates a greater surplus in the long run. They're going to create fee increases. So taxes will go up. Fees, and it won't be car taxes, but it'll be fees. And what's the other word for fees? But California is well known for not using the...
Or like a road usage charge. I wonder what county administration thought of that one.
Yeah, so
Sandhag.
It's going to get worse. Any last words? Should we give up the... It's kind of late, but, you know, they won't do it. But I don't think we can hold the Olympics. I think the Olympics could be a unmitigated disaster. You get the final thoughts.
Well, the other thing I'm thinking about is, will this be an embarrassment for the nation? You saw how well they were able to clean things up in San Francisco. They shuffled some people around and cleaned up the streets when Xi Jinping came. But are they going to be able to do the same thing for the entirety of Los Angeles? We're going to be on the world stage. What is it going to say about America?
They don't. They're going to need every hotel. They can't be throwing the homeless in hotels to hide them. Because you're talking about massive chunks of the city being used, you know, for these events. It's going to be a bad scene, a bad, bad scene. All because of Democrat priorities against the California constituents doing what's right for them. All right. Newsom, 750 million tiny homes pledge falters, zero occupied since March. Now, this is old news technically because it happened in March 2023. Governor Gavin Newsom pledged 1,200 tiny homes costing $750 million, $625,000 per unit. These are like about the size of 500 by 500. I can't remember what it is, but there's, here we go, as small as 120 square feet. And they're going to cost $625,000 per unit. First of all, that's just ludicrous. And they were supposed to help out 181,000 plus homeless population, targeting encampment reduction with modular units, again, as small as 120 feet. Tyler, not one has been built yet. Not only were they overpriced, they haven't been built. Sacramento was assigned 350 units, San Jose 200 units, San Diego County 150. Nothing's been done. And that's why we're following up. We people are your investigative reporters. Tyler, you need to get that fedora hat. Investigative reporters. You know, our deep throat has told us not one home has been built. Your thoughts?
Now, this goes back to something that happened at the San Diego County Board of Supervisors. Tara Lawson-Remmer, she was trying to argue about placement of the tiny homes. That debate over the placement of the tiny homes, that's this program, right?
Right.
That we're talking about?
Right.
Yeah. So you have all this infighting at the county level. And this is why, well, one of the reasons that they only been built in Sacramento is because the county authorities in San Diego and other places can't agree where the site would be located to actually build these things. It's a hot potato. No one wants this encampment next to them, essentially.
That's a good point. I don't want the homeless next to me. You know, I served with this woman. Hardcore, super, uber, duper, hard. I mean, she made the average leftist look fundamentalist conservative. You know, she worked for, say, one of these, she was a lawyer. So when they were talking about the low-income homes here where I live, she was on the front lines. No, 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 no. We cannot have, you know, these low-income homes. I go, well, isn't this what you fought for, supported? You do not understand, William. When the economy goes down, businesses go under, and they stop making their payments, and they become homeless and loitering and drugs and crime. Everything goes up. And I'm like, isn't that very hypocritical? You know, she fights for it everywhere else, but if it's in her backyard, no, 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 no. And you're right. It makes it a big sense because they're being pressured. You know, because where is the base of their votes? From the working class. If the working class get homeless next to them, they're going to lose their votes. And it's a donor class that pays them to keep that stuff out of their neighborhoods. That's a very, very good point. My question, Tyler, and I know you probably don't know, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I tossed the ball to you. Where's the money, Tyler? Where did the money go? $750 million. Now, that's almost $1 billion, people. Where did it go?
I don't know. Hopefully not to Hagerty Consulting.
This screams and reeks of mismanagement, corruption. You know what we need? We need what Claude DeMaio keeps talking about.
One of the questions I have about this funding is this just the construction, or does this also include wraparound services?
Oh, no, just the construction.
This is just the construction.
Oh, yeah. That's how, well, they may have money allotted, but the money that's going out right now is just for the construction. That's how that stuff tends to work. This is a project built around the construction and building the homes.
Yeah.
You know, maintaining them and everything else is a separate issue. And the reason I say that is that as I did my research, there were some modular homes built somewhere, but they weren't being maintained. Getting the city to maintain them to do what was probably – there was like flooding issues, this or that, and they couldn't get anybody out there. So these people
– Another big thing is fire issues in these camps. A lot of fire issues.
No, that's true. That's true. So not only are there bureaucratic hurdles, there's high costs. There's a shift from state-led procurement to local responsibilities, which you brought up with the Board of Supervisors. We're at a point where it's stalled progress. Now we have public outrage. And calls for Newsom's accountability, which persists, but he will ignore and he will lie about and he will sit there and say, I gave him the money. What, you want me to go build it myself? You think I'm Jimmy Carter or somebody? Final word on tiny homes.
Well, part of me hopes this is successful. I don't know what you're going to do with this because the alternative that they like to talk about is Housing First. Housing First, which is a completely failed disastrous model of building essentially high-rise luxury condominium units for the homeless in beachfront areas, which is just makes no sense. If they can be provided some sort of small shelter where they can live and have services, that makes more sense in theory. But I don't know if the California government can actually successfully execute this.
You know, I said I was going to give you the last word. I just want to say this, though. I am against any tiny home, anything like this. In Japan, they have these literally cubicles people live in the city. And they've tracked tons of studies that's not healthy. And in New York City, they were testing micro apartments. This is part of the elites. This isn't a conspiracy. They want us all living like cockroaches, smaller apartments in urban settings, tiny homes. They don't like the fact that I live in a rural area. They'd rather – in fact, they're trying to create my area into an urban area. And we've been fighting, but it's happening. Where I live has gone from the country to literally – we have suburbs now out here. We have one big suburb. It's called Park Place. So whenever they talk to these homes – and here's the other thing. Well, it's just temporary for the homeless to get on the street until they get healthy. They never do. They won't take their drugs. They're alcoholics. They're druggies. They're this. They're that. Are there people who do want to stop being homeless? Yes, but they're in the minority. Before you challenge me, people, you take a walk through the homeless, and you're going to be walking in fear because it's not like a homo that you see in the movies from the 1950s singing and dancing, you know, the hobo life. No, these are unpredictable people. There's video out there of them fighting, knifing each other. I mean, it's fires. It's nasty. All right. Say no to tiny homes. Oh, you're too young. You weren't even born. Nancy Reagan had a whole thing with say no to drugs. Well, I say no to tiny homes. UC Davis suspends law student group over BDS resolution amid Title VI scrutiny. So UC Davis suspends Law Students Association. This is a positive thing that's happening. So just last week, or just a few days ago, actually, UC Davis suspended the LSA, the Law Students Association, and seized its 30,000 plus, about 40,000 budget after it passed a BDS resolution on February 28th, 2025, because it violated university policies requiring viewpoint neutral funding.
Just for our listeners, do you want to refresh them on what the acronym BDS means?
What the hell does BDS mean? I have it in my notes here somewhere. It's a resolution. I have it down here. Hold on one second here. Let me find it. All right, Tyler, we found it. Tell the audience what it means. I just didn't have it in my notes like I thought I did.
So we did a quick lookup. So BDS stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. It's one of these phrases that they talk about, and these represent the goals of campus pro-Palestine movements. They want to boycott things that they see as supporting Israel and divest their institutions from companies supporting Israel and sanction those companies that do business with Israel. That's what it's all about.
And that's seen as a discriminatory policy, and there's a UC policy that mandates neutrality, and thus they were suspended. These are 18 student groups who supported the resolution. They're in solidarity with Palestine. They're, in my eyes, they're nothing but anti-Semites. Maybe they're ignorant, but they're anti-Semites because they try to claim Israel's apartheid, all kinds of nonsense, and they're targeting Jewish students as well. Now, there is a broader context here. There's a law against this in the state of California. You can't be doing this. Now, the people are saying, well, this is goes against their free speech. Well, you don't have free speech. You know, the college has a right to put their own rules. Unless and people may argue, well, it's a free speech because it's a government college. But it's a Title VI violation here. It's among, let's see. UC Davis is among 60 universities under the U.S. Department of Education scrutiny for Title VI violation tied to alleged anti-Semitic harassment, you know, with a prior civil rights settlement mandating staff training. So in essence, what they're saying, you can't be bigoted. It's kind of like, I guess what I'm trying to say, Tyler, is if this was the KKK saying we're against this African nation, you know, for whatever reason, it would come down the same way. Your thoughts on this?
I'm going to push back a little bit. You said that free speech doesn't apply. This is a government college. This is not a private institution. So I think free speech does apply. You see things like this, UT Austin, they've had pushbacks on protesters, whatever. Regardless of that, these people violated Title VI. And so under Title VI, they need to be disciplined, essentially. And so I agree with that course of action. And they're anti-Semitic at the end of the day, and it shouldn't be tolerated.
Well, it's called viewpoint neutral basis, and that means that funding decisions cannot be influenced by the political, religious, or ideological perspectives of the organizations. And the principle is actually rooted in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and reinforced by California's own free speech protection. It sounds a little odd. You know, but I guess that's just it. They weren't being neutral in their viewpoint. They were specifically targeting one organization. So for example, the University of California's policies applying to campus activities, organization, and students, PACAOs, I guess, it emphasizes that registered campus organizations must be treated equally regardless of their viewpoints. Maybe I'm saying the opposite thing. We're going to have to revisit this one next week. What happened is I don't have the actual article, and when I took my notes, I'm trying to cut and paste it. But in essence, they're breaking some of the guidelines and rules, and that's why they've been suspended. And I agree. Like you said, at the end of the day, they're being anti-Semitic. We've seen that through the on-campus protests being intimidation, being harassment.
In some cases, literally assaulting, physically assaulting Jewish students.
Exactly. And, you know, I had an issue with my libertarian partner about Mahmoud Khalil, and he's like, free speech, this, that, where's the violence? And I said, look, the moment Columbia told those students, you're not to come to campus, you can go to your class via Zoom or online, they said. That was because they feared for those Jewish kids because of violence, intimidation, bullying, etc. That in and of itself kind of shows where these protests are.
And Columbia is a private institution also. They get to make the rule.
Funding. See, that's a catch-22. And the courts had deliberated on that when you get funding, you know? And that's where all things – the colleges – are a tricky place. But the problem is there's a track record of these groups being violent, being anti-Semitic. And then with the guideline on top of that, they have the track record, and thus they felt confident in doing this. Plus, what's worse, dealing with a student group that you can probably destroy and crush, or losing hundreds of millions from the federal government?
Well, we saw what Columbia did. So
exactly. All right. California lawmakers revisit the 2019 audit. The state is still unprepared for vulnerable disasters. So the reason I brought this up is this was done in 2019. An audit was, how can you guys handle emergencies? Well, because of COVID, they put it off, which was, there was no reason to put it off. That was excuse given. And why did they put it off? Because the audit criticized the Office of Emergency Services for inadequate support. The counties like Ventura, Sonoma, and is it lacking guidance for special needs populations and failing to learn from past disasters. Enter the January 2025 Eden fire showed this was true, the audit. And they finally heard on the audit this past month. Your thoughts on that, Tyler?
Well, I'm glad that we finally actually have new laws that mandate the OES to review these plans, because we got to take care of this. So I'm glad that's changing, but really disgraceful that they push it off because of COVID.
Yes, I agree. Hopefully something can be done, but I got to be honest. We are wasting our money on every other program except for programs to take care of Californian constituents. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. And even if I am, that's how it feels to literally every California constituent, which is why Trump may have lost California and lost a lot of counties. But you saw those 15 to 30 point pro leftist numbers get moved over to the right by 5 to 10 points in some counties. And we're talking deep blue districts. So am I wrong to think that, Tyler?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Part of it is that the Democrats have lost the mantle of the common sense party. The Republicans have that now. Signalgate is kind of eroding that a little bit. And that was what a lot of voters said, is they said that the Democrats of California are not focusing on the bread and butter issues like, I don't know, forest fire safety, and that's why they're turning conservative.
You think they're turning conservative, or are they just not going to vote for it?
Well, some degree. They're not voting, or they're turning conservative, or the conservatives are turning out to vote. Some combination has changed, has squeezed that gap a little bit.
Gotcha. I agree. All right. Moving on. You know what? It may take lawsuits, too, to change it. Because here's the other thing. When these type of audits happen and then nothing's done on them, it kind of opens the door up for lawsuits. You know? Really? Well, we didn't know. Oh, yeah, you did. There was this audit. Well, we didn't hear it because you purposely, you know, they didn't just have to get the perception to the jury. And is that our final topic there?
That's it. Before the blitz. Topic. Before we get blitzed here.
Let's get to the Cali blitz. You know, the county blitz is my favorite. And I just want to pause real quick here, Tyler, for 1 second. Hold on 1 second, Tyler. All right, people, we are back. And, y'all didn't know we left. But it was bugging me because I just took my notes wrong in regards to the UC Davis issue, and I found it. It was in my other notes. The reason they were able to do this, take their budget and suspend the group, is – It's a conflict with California's AB 2844, and that AB is Assembly Bill 2844, and that prohibits economic discrimination targeting individuals or businesses based on national origin. In this case, Israelis. And the resolution stated, the people of Palestine have had their lives, livelihoods, and autonomy systematically targeted and dismantled by the settler colonial state of Israel for over 75 years. Yada, yada, yada. So in essence, that's what they were conflicting with. California's AB 2844, which they can't sit there and discriminate against Israel because of the national origin. In this case, Israelis, the Jewish kids. You know, and you're right, Tyler. They were intimidating them. That just kept bugging me. So I wanted to get that one out to you guys before we close the show out. But before we close the show out, Tyler, let's get to our Cali Blitz. And for the audience, what is our Cali Blitz?
Cali Blitz. These are our hot takes.
Meaning we go through them rather quickly.
Lightning. We go through them very quickly.
And we'd like to stay local at times as well as cross the state. And so let's go a little bit local here. Lakeside school board member applauds Trump's education move. So Andrew Hayes is a Lakeside school board member, Lakeside being a small town in East County of San Diego. Andrew Hayes, he being of getting shellacked by Carl DeMaio in the run for the our state assembly seat. He actually applauds President Trump closing the U.S. Department of Education. He says that the federal agency's $80 billion budget stifles districts like Lakeside. Your thoughts?
Well, I agree with Andrew here, and he's right that this move actually makes things better for us because in districts like Lakeside, things are being pushed for state-led education mandates like Common Core, and this can potentially contain material that parents are not agreeing with. And so I think this is a good move overall. This is going to give – this goes a long ways towards restoring parental rights.
You know what? That's the best way to put it, because my take is not my take, but my question was, like, there's $15 million that the union leader, Kelly Flores, says is that we're losing. And my take on that is funds will probably shift to states or another agency. And the Department of Education said they are not removing essential funding. And the Department of Education will remain there because they don't have the authority to actually do remove it, but they can dismantle it. So I think she's doing a lot of hogwash, and that $15 million was probably used to control and implement a lot of the programs you mentioned. And so, number two, the Cali Blitz number two. I'll let you handle this one here. I know you wanted to talk about this a few weeks ago. The vote centers are open for District 1's special election here in San Diego. We are split down the middle, 2-2, Republicans versus Democrats to control the Board of Supervisors' vote. For the audience, for over 20 years, Republicans, we had billions in surplus. We were fiscally run well, but then the county party took the ball, their eye off the ball. Democrats came in and took over. We are now in debt from the county, and a Democrat Board of Supervisors, out of the blue, Tara Lawson-Remmer, came out and said she was not going to serve the seat she had won last year, and there's a special election. The reason I'm bringing up the vote centers are open, they're drop-off boxes. I don't like that. What are your thoughts on mail-in and drop-off systems?
Well, we've seen what's happened over the last few years, and election security is always a concern. I think this election is a little too soon for us to receive the benefits of the recent executive order about election integrity. But if you want to talk about that for just a moment, can you refresh the audience on what I'm referring to here?
Well, President Trump signed an executive order in terms for election integrity, imposing rules, not guidelines, but actual you must follow this. And in essence, he's tying it to federal elections. But the kicker is we don't have 90% of our elections aligned with federal elections. You have special elections or small local stuff. But for the big stuff, you have They usually align with the federal elections, and the county can't afford to have two sets of everything, meaning the federal, they're going to vote this way, local, you're going to vote this way, you know. So expect this to be fought, but that's what Tyler's referring to. We don't have that's not in place yet. And for the audience here, before Tyler comes back with his final comment on this, the mail-in and drop-box system, it risks voter fraud because it potentially allows unverified ballots without strict in-person checks to be done. So, for example, a duplicate ballot could be mailed and then dropped off by someone exploiting lax signature verification. And that happens a lot, especially if volunteers aren't trained well or if you have nefarious individuals in those registrars. Your thoughts on this, Tyler?
I was going to say even the well-trained volunteers, it's kind of a stretch to call them well-trained. I've seen them verify these signatures, and it's you could just make a scribble, and like as long as like the lines are up and down and they write in cursive, then it's fine. You think I'm joking when I say the lines are up and down and they write in cursive? Those are actual guidelines that the signature verifiers use. And as long as you match like two or three out of some number of guidelines, then it's a verified signature.
I agree. It's tough. It's tough stuff. And that's how voter fraud happens. That's what I have documented voter fraud from the beginning of the Founding Fathers when we became a country up to this past year with documented cases. Nobody's going to stop me from continuing that because we have voter fraud in this country and it's getting worse and worse. There's only one reason California has a law now that says it is illegal to ask for voter ID, and that's so they can cheat.
And they did that to punish Huntington Beach that had passed the city council resolution requiring voter ID.
And 99.9% of races that have Republicans leading at election night, anywhere from 2 to 4 to 6 weeks later, 8 weeks later, the Democrats squeeze out a victory. And it's always by a few.
We saw that with Ryan Keim in Oceanside. Yeah. Ryan was leading for days and days and days, and then Esther squeezed out a win by a couple hundred votes.
Exactly. So don't tell us there's voter fraud. Don't tell somebody who comes from a country where voter fraud was the norm until the dictators were removed. All right. Rundown number three. Questions around DeMaio staffer committee membership. So we're going to go on this in depth, and we're trying to get Carl DeMaio to come on and talk to us about some state issues, but it's a great question for him. But right now there's a battle brewing. Carl DeMaio has a staffer named Tommy Knepper who allegedly joined the San Diego Republican Central Committee while living in Riverside County. Obviously, that's residency issues because there's a lot of there was a major one vote issue, which Knepper actually could be seen as that. His vote was a tiebreaker in that situation. The Times of San Diego reports Knepper voted in committee elections despite owning a home in Riverside. Now, see, owning a home in Riverside is okay, but was he living in Riverside? If he was, that violated the bylaws. It kind of turns everything moot. DeMaio ally Paula Witzel says that there will be court if this happens, and this should only happen to the Central Committee. I'm like, that's kind of like asking for her to be sued. I don't know how this is going to turn out, but my whole point in bringing this up is this is big news. Carl DeMaio is a rising star in this state, and this could be a major setback to him. Your quick thoughts, and we're going to open this up into a bigger topic down the road when more information comes out, as this is an important topic here in terms of state and county politics.
Well, just for the audience to let them know, I am an alternate on the San Diego County Central Committee. And so there's certain information I know about this that I can't disclose to the public. But I will say this, there's a very good likelihood that this could become a public corruption case. This may not look good for the party. There is a very good chance that this goes very far south.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't, but it's ugly, and I've been holding off talking about that one. I just figured, let's drop it. We got to talk about it sooner or later, you know. All right, number four, Santa Clarita leads the U.S. in credit card debt. California is arguably, it's either us or Hawaii. It goes back and forth. The worst states to live in terms of the cost of living. Like Hawaii, we are taxed to death. We are regulated to death. We are feed to death. We are whatever for death when it comes to raising money for the state that they don't term taxes but are. And what does that mean? There's a lot of people living off of their credit cards. There's an average household credit card debt of $23,000. And that comes per Wallet Hub's March 13, 2025 study of over 180 cities. Tyler, six of those cities in the top 10 are California, Santa Clarita, and locally, Chula Vista, Fontana, LA area, Riverside, which is north of us, kind of northeast, Rancho Cucamonga, another one, and Glendale. And for the audience, Riverside and Rancho Cucamonga, that's your true working class, your blue-collar working class. Fontana's another one in L.A. Glendale's a little surprising. Must be more working class than I thought. This is terrible because if we start defaulting, that will affect California's spending economy and could destabilize it, meaning it could go from worse to even worse here. Your thoughts?
Yeah, unfortunately, the U.S. economy is built off the back of consumer debt, and consumers have piled more and more in debt, and now things are fraying around the edges. You can see in other areas, for example, auto loan delinquencies, I think, are at their all-time high. So these aren't good signs. I'm not surprised that these cities are in California. Some of the highest taxes, highest cost of living, highest housing costs, and people love their cars. They got to go around in that new leased Benz, right?
Well, part of the problem here, Tyler, is we are a nation. I've been preaching this for 30 years. We are a nation that is taught it's okay to be in debt. They literally teach us, oh, buy it now, pay it later. That's the mantra here. And don't believe me, people, the nation has $1.2 trillion in credit card debt. Chula Vista's not doing so bad. Hey, mi Latinos down in Chula Vista, we're only 21,000. Now, experts warn that if this debt spirals, widespread bankruptcies could destabilize California's economy by slashing consumer spending, and that's a $2 trillion-plus engine. And so, Tyler, if people thought it couldn't get any worse, I think they're wrong.
Yeah. Well, especially people are talking now about recession fears, and if the job market doesn't hold up, then the ability of consumers to pay off monthly payments is reduced as well. And so it's a spiral of delinquencies. So we don't want that to happen, obviously. But
I guess I have the last word. What's even worse, people are going to be filing bankruptcy. So here's what they do. This pisses me off because I met a couple guys in the military who did this. They know they're going to file. Before they file, they run up all their credit card debt, get everything, bye. Then they file because they get to keep it. It's disgusting. I know. That's what people do. So this is not just a state overtaxed. It's our own greed, our own selfishness. And then we look the other way and point the finger. What's that saying? There's four fingers pointing back. Cali Blitz number 5, California Insurance Commissioner's attendance under scrutiny. Lo and behold, another corrupt politician in my eyes, Ricardo Lara. The California Insurance Commissioner's attendance record has come under fire. Data shows Lara attended fewer than half of his scheduled meetings in 2024. So that's just a reflection on how much he cares about doing his job, how much he cares about the constituents who elected him. The article talked about leadership. No, to me it's about you don't give a rat's tail about the people you're supposed to be representing, which he should considering how bad our insurance industry is in turmoil with every insurance leaving because of the fires, mudslides, the overcost, not being able to raise rates to be competitive. So he says that he's actively engaged through virtual meetings and staff delegations, insisting his focus remains on tackling the state's insurance crisis. My only take on this is bull bleep, bull cocky, bull doo-doo. You are scamming on the job and not doing the job and living it up, going to banquets, going to speaking engagements, doing everything but your job. That's my take. And remember this come election day. This is a guy, you're struggling to get insurance in California, look at Ricardo Lara. You get the final word here, Tyler.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. His attendance record is almost as bad as Tara Lawson Remmer's attendance record. But that Democrat just won re-election, so, you know, I guess you can just surf all day and not show up on the job and do just fine in San Diego if you're a Democrat.
Looks that way. County Blitz number six. Let's go back to the university system. The University of California freezes hiring amid budget woes. UC President Michael Drake ordered a system-wide hiring freeze, citing a $500 million deficit driven by an 8% state budget cut. Now, y'all thinking, damn Trump, damn the feds. No. This freeze halts 2,000 open positions, including faculty. However, this is coming from Gavin Newsom's budget cuts. Thoughts, Tyler?
Yeah, I've heard a bit about this. So my wife's family, they are involved in the UC system, University of California, Irvine. And so I've heard about these hiring freezes at different schools. It is Newsom, but there's another component to this as well. It's all the federal grant money drying up. And so if, let's say, all your PhD students and researchers, if you can't get grant money to fund their research, then you have to, the university has to pay them a stipend out of its paychecks. And so indirectly, these funding cuts are actually also federal funding cuts are contributing most definitely to this.
Right. I looked that up because that was my first thought, and that's not the case this time around. This is coming off of 70-some-odd billion in debt. He's trying to make cuts like that. So you're right. There is federal funding cut coming, but these cuts are directly based off of Newsom. I guess they separate it certain ways. But that said, I get what you're saying, because at the end of the day, you kind of have to look at it reality-wise. You look at it as one big pool. So from that perspective, yeah, you're right. But from the way it's played out, this is one of the few times. But that said, so what I'm trying to say is, it could be worse. Maybe those federal funding cuts are going to affect even more things there, you know. But yeah, that was my first. I was like, it's got to be the federal funding. So I was a little shocked, but I would agree with you when push comes to shove that those they're looking ahead too. Wow, yeah. Not just this, it's the federal funding.
Because the hiring freeze isn't just about next month or next quarter. It's about what's the projection for the future.
Right, but you know, it also makes you think, all these universities, it's just more bloated, more bloated, more bloated. This professor has to have an assistant, has this, that. You know, they don't even teach. They don't even teach some of these professors where the money and the grants go to, you know, to pay them, you know. So I got to be honest, I am no longer, I have not been a college proponent for decades because of the cost of college and the fact you can become a plumber, you know, and earn much more. A friend of mine's niece went to nursing school. Then she stuck around for 6 months longer for a specialty. She left that nursing school kind of like $12,000 in debt or $20,000 in debt. Her starting job because of her specialty was like $75,000 as an entry-level nurse, you know. Yeah. So I am not a pro, especially a liberal arts degree, Tyler. That woman studies major, you're not working at Grumley's Media, darling. I want a business major. Well, there are a dime a dozen. That makes my pool even better, bigger and better to choose from. You know, Blitz numbers, and I do mean that. Not because I don't like women's studies major. It's like the business guy at least understands concepts of business. You have concepts of I hate men. Democrats defend California's EV mandate with controversial ruling. So we talked about the EV and the whole mess and the upcoming fight, but I guess there's a 2025 ruling by Judge Hernan Vera. He's a Newsom-appointed federal judge. Wasn't Newsom appointed when he became a federal judge, became elevated, but he's also a former DEI advocate, and he's trying to uphold the state's mandate requiring all new cars sold by 2035 to be zero emission. So they're falling back on this judge, but yet the Trump fight, what they're trying to say is, no, we're listening to this judge. Not you, Trump. So some critics argue that his decision to block the, a post-2022 referendum challenge, and that challenge was the 2025 ballot initiative, you know, to repeal California's 2035 zero emission. So it's not only Trump and what he's doing, but it's this. They say he lacks legal precedent, accusing him of judicial activism. And I agree with the critics. But the point is, the powers that be are falling back on him as their excuse. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you can see it. If the ruling is in their favor, they're just going to fall back on it. We see it with people like Senator Elena Gonzalez, and she's saying, well, this is really critical because we need this ruling to hold in place so we can cut transportation emissions and stop the cows from farting. I made up the last part. But
Lena needs to stop farting. Her husband, her kids, to get the cork, pop it in there. You do your job. But instead, she wants everybody else to stop farting. Yeah. I just crashed around that whole methane thing as if you can regulate cows. Oh, man, it's like the Keystone Cops running our government. Let's revisit another topic we've talked about, Tyler. California high-speed rail faces funding deadline. So this isn't the high-speed rail from San Francisco to L.A. or whatever the one they were talking about. This is the one from – they talked about on Bill Maher, Gavin Newsom did. Merced to Bakersfield. They are short a couple of dollars, Tyler. How many dollars do you think they're short?
I don't know. Give or take $7 billion.
That's right, baby. That's right. So the cost have also ballooned to $35 billion. This is only a 171-mile stretch. Could you imagine if they had tried to build the railway system from?
And this is a 171-mile stretch on mostly flat land, the easiest topography to possibly build on.
You know, this reminds me of that movie with Shelley Long and Tom Hanks from maybe the 90s called The Money Pit. Everything they put into the house was just a money pit. That's what this is to me. Take your losses and shut it off unless you can get private funding. Your thoughts?
Yeah, should have shut it down. I mean, the original person in 2008 who was a proponent of this, I forget their name, they're a California politician. They've publicly turned around and said this was a mistake. This is just like that movie Money Pit. We just keep throwing more into it, and there are just more and more problems appear, and we don't get anything done.
I agree. I think at the end of the day, privatize it. Let it make a profit doing this. I'll be honest, if there was something in San Diego to L.A. that was like a six-hour trip where I could be comfortable, lay down, sit, relax, have a beer, I'd do that. But these projects, to me, they're just boondoggles or reward cronies, and they want to keep feeding it until it eventually gets built, and then the cost to maintain it's going to be even worse. All right, Cali Blitz number 9, Supreme Court upholds ghost gun regulations. So this came out last week, and I didn't realize it was a San Diego lawsuit that was being that they won law. You know, the Supreme Court upheld Biden's ATF rules on ghost guns in a 6-3 decision. And that means we have to have serial numbers and background check requirements for these kits that build them. And the biggest disappointment in my eyes, Justice Amy Coney Barrett, they have something on her, Tyler. She rejected the gun makers' claims backing the ATF's 2022 rule, which ATF wants to take our guns. They've come out and said that. And they're trying to target 20,000 untraced weapons. Justice Alito did the right thing. He dissented. He said the regulation redefines the firearm too broadly, impugning on our Second Amendment is what this has done. I agree. They want to take our guns. Illegal guns are always going to sprout up. And even worse, it's not in my notes here, but I did read the article. They also made it illegal to have guns, these ghost guns, within city limits. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is unconstitutional at its core. This is not good that we had 6-3 who affirmed the ATF's ruling. Can look at the dissenting opinions by Clarence Thomas and Alito. Alito said that basically this decision meant that we had agreed it was okay to rewrite statutory text. And Alito said that his colleagues really applied the wrong test to determine whether or not this ATF rule was valid. They even talk about it. The affirming decision says that this rule was not confirmed or denied. This ruling was not confirmed or denied based on the Second Amendment. This was on simply, I think it was more like executive law about the power of an agency to carry out particular regulations.
Yeah, which means this can come up again from a different angle. eventually, like the abortion bill, a different angle. But man, that Amy Comey Barrett, boy, she's nothing but a Judge Roberts, Justice Roberts. Hold on, who's the chief of the bench? The one who rewrote the law and said that Obamacare was.
Yes, Chief Justice John Roberts.
Yeah, okay, so I was right, Roberts, yeah. All right, the final one. And she is the one person who I think could actually win. Nicole Shanahan opts out of government race. Nicole Shanahan was RFK Jr.'s 2024 VP pick. She's seen as a darling by libertarians, by conservatives, by Republicans, and some Democrats. She won't run for California governor, ending months of speculation. She cited her focus on family and health advocacy. She's big health nut after her VP bid. And she's also a fresh voice against Newsom and Karen Bass, because she is funding the recall Karen Bass agenda or recall Karen Bass campaign. There you go. And she's listed as its sole major funder. She's worth $1 billion. She was married to like a multi-billionaire, and then they got divorced. So God bless her. She's not a dumb woman. She's very smart, articulate, and good for her on both counts. I think she needs to get her feet wet, understand, learn a bit more about politics. She's a little naive in certain ways, brilliant woman in certain ways. But, I mean, when it comes to politics, you know, sometimes that knife's in their back and they don't realize how it got there, even though they should have. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I was going to say, well, she might be turning away from the governorship, but she's set her eyes on the cesspool, the pond that is L.A., and she has her eyes on one particular bad bass fish she's going to try and wrangle out of there.
And there you have it, my friends. That is today's Fired Up California Style. I hope you enjoyed it. We apologize for confusing you a little bit with I did not have that one law for the CEU Davis and the student group being suspended and their money being taken away. We hope you enjoyed the show, regardless of that little snafu. Gas prices are jumping. We finally found the murderer. Hopefully she'll see justice and the murder of the poor Cal Fire chief, the LGBTQ woman. The Palisades fire recovery, you're seeing the reality. A Democrat rule. Four permits since they started issuing permits. Karen Bass begging for money. There's not enough money for the Olympics. So what are we going to do? It's going to get worse. You will see taxes, fees, etc. raised. And I don't even think it's going to be a great turnout. You know, the tiny homes, where did the $750 million go? Newsom. And then obviously the 2019 audit, where they want to force us all to have EV vehicles by 2035. And our Cali Blitz. Mr. Tyler, any final words before I end our show today?
Nope. Let's keep going and see y'all next week.
Outstanding. So everybody, before I go, do not forget to like and share this podcast. Tyler's job security depends on it. And do not forget, bookmark grumbliesmedia.com. You can find this podcast, Fired Up California, which is obviously California issues, but you can also find Fired Up, our national show. Live stream that every Friday at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And you can find this podcast and all our others at Rumble, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, ePandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. For Tyler and myself, William Del Pilar, your conservative Latino, I might add. Until next week, this is Fired Up California, and we bid you adieu.